Welcome to the Plastic Please Me Store podcast.
We are your hosts, Trey the Explainer.
And me, Miles Greb.
A podcast about the natural world.
Things that people claim are part of the natural world.
And things that used to be.
Trey and I have been talking about doing this for a while now, because I think we met on Twitter, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just tell a little about what I do. My name's Miles Greb. I am a comic book writer and a SciComm guy. I helped organize the March for Science a couple years ago, and I create a couple like pro science comic books. Probably best known for After the Gold Rush, which is a return to optimistic science fiction and follows the last scientist. She returns to Earth to find it a state of wilderness. Really inspired by like Cosmos and Star Trek. This kind of view that science can help us understand the world better and make the world a better place if we're devoted to it. And then Clovis, which is my more paleontology anthropology comic, which is set in North America about 12,000 years ago, and follows some of the first people there, the Clovis, that I mostly did because I wanted to kind of give those people more focus and deal with their story more, because I think they're important to humanity, but also because there's lots of cool megafauna in North America that I wanted to see drawn. Yeah, so that's kind of what I do. And Trey here, you may know from his awesome YouTube show. I'll let him talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a YouTuber. I used to talk, my main focus was on dinosaurs and cryptids. I've since branched out to like history and anthropology and stuff. Essentially, if it's science, I'll probably talk about it on my channel. Just like educational stuff, all kinds of things. I have trouble describing what my channel is about.
Yeah, it's basically weird old stuff that isn't around anymore that we wish we knew more about.
Yes, yes.
I think we both kind of have this like love for things like that we just know the surface of, because I think, you know, we're both, I believe, like methodological naturalists. You know, we believe in like evidence and things that we can see, but we also like the things that like your imagination really can bounce off of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, like cryptids and stuff, I don't believe in any particular them are likely to be true, but I love the ideas of these monsters and stories. And like I said on Twitter the other day, you know, I think that a lot of our love of like Bigfoot, for example, comes from like a grief that we have kind of like killed the wilderness. And like, we can see the trees when we're driving down the road, like especially me in the Northwest, you know, I can see the dark line of the forest, but I know that if I parked my car and walked in there, I wouldn't find anything that I don't already know is there.
Right.
And I think that there's a sadness in that.
Yeah.
And so I think some people deal with that sadness by expanding on their belief in monsters, you know? That's probably pop psychology and not accurate, but that's what I romantically believe.
I agree with that. I think it's like, I did a video on like DNA evidence and stuff in cryptids, and that the fact that like DNA has sort of robbed the world of like cryptids, where you can essentially just identify them now. If there's not really DNA evidence, it's pretty certain that it's not real. It's sad. It's kind of sad that like the world's shrinking. It's gotten so small that there's very few places for things to hide anymore.
Yeah. One thing that really dissuaded me from my kind of more magical worldview that like I grew up with when I was younger was, I forget the name of it, but they scanned all of Loch Ness in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're going to find it, guys. It's because that's my favorite monster. You know, the Loch Ness monster. It's so like romantic and cool. And then there's just nothing. And yeah. I had to accept that, you know, and then like now we have but maybe it's hiding in a cave, right? Maybe
there's like five of them.
Yeah, but then we have eDNA, right? This environmental DNA database where you can kind of like look at like a whole web of the ecosystem, and there's nothing down there.
Yeah,
and that kind of evidence, the eDNA evidence, is just so compelling. It's, what are you gonna do?
Right.
But the history of these creatures and how people talk about them is still interesting, even if the animals are not real, because it's just about the animals that are real, us, and how we view our surroundings, how we talk about them, how they inspire us. And those stories are still interesting, even if there's nothing creeping and crawling out there.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
And I mean, there's still stuff to be discovered. I mean, right, the megamouth shark wasn't known until like 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
That was the 70s, right? I don't know how long the 70s was.
77. I think I calculated it was like the same. I think it was 76.
Because the 90s was 10 years ago. So I guess that's like 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. No, there's still stuff out. It's definitely in the ocean. Like, I don't know. Definitely not Megalodon. Everybody goes for Megalodon right away.
If you're wondering our take on Megalodon, it's a no,
It's a strong
unfortunately.
anti-Megalodon stance. But other things like,
We'll
I
put that
don't
in the
know.
tags of the show, anti-Megalodon podcast.
Other shark, like other species, like there's definitely tons and tons of fish species yet to be identified.
So
Don't lose hope.
I came up with the name of the podcast mostly because, you know, the famous Loch Ness monster photo, right? The Surgeon's General photo taken by a non-surgeon.
Gynecologist.
It was a photo is a photo of a plastic and wooden plesiosaur. You know, and that plastic and wooden plesiosaur kind of inspired the world. And although the monster that it's supposed to, you know, represent isn't real, that plastic and wooden plesiosaur sunk into the loch. So it is still out there. So the
Oh my
Loch
gosh, is
Ness
it?
monster, yeah, it is. They
I've
never
never
recovered
heard
it.
this.
They never
Wow.
recovered it, and that plastic ain't going away. So it's still out there. The Loch Ness monster that inspired everyone lives to this day, and it is still in the loch. So there's still a little bit of wonder out there, even if we have to make it up ourselves.
That's amazing. I like that. Wow, that's an amazing. That's great. I like that.
Poetry, baby.
Again, it's like poetry, so that they rhyme. Every stanza kind of rhymes with the last one. Hopefully it'll work.
Yeah, so what we're going to do on the show normally, we're going to talk about a couple of little anthropology, archaeology, monster kind of sciencey stories, you know. So some stuff that interested us, and then we'll probably talk about some pop culture monster archaeology thing, and then each episode we're going to watch a Monster Quest. If people don't know about Monster Quest, is on History Channel, one of the most thought-provoking evidence-based channels there is. used to do this show where they would have a bunch of people go look for a monster, and then every week they wouldn't find it.
I think there was one where it was on like giant squids or something where they found like new video, but that's the one exception out of I don't know how long was it on.
But we kept tuning into it, so
Oh.
we really can't clown on them too hard.
Yes.
So let's see. So first thing I wanted to talk about this time was in Peru, which is in South America. We often think about, like, in archaeological time, you know, the Inca and their really awesome civilization that we had there. Mostly because for us in the West, when the Spanish came over, that's who they encountered. But there was a lot of different civilizations up and down the coast of Peru well before this. And we recently discovered a temple in this region from the try to pronounce this right, the Kupasnika people. And that's my best
I'm
Peru
awful.
Native.
I can't complain.
I
I'm awful with
I believe it's
pronunciations.
Kupasnika, but I could be wrong. Apologies for that. But the important part is this farmer was excavating somewhat clumsily to build his new farmland, and he uncovered this temple. And on this temple, there is a 3,200-year-old giant spider painted on the side of it that was holding a knife in one of its hands. Yeah, which is a pretty awesome god, if
Yeah.
that's indeed what it is. We can't see all eight of its arms, so he may have had multiple knives. So he could have been a dual-wielding spider god, but this is not known to us. So like, this is a really awesome find. I just love
Yeah.
that, you know, like monsters and gods always have this kind of like powerful presence drawn through societies that have never met each other all over the world, right? We're just really good at making up monsters.
Yeah.
So the experts on this theorize that this spider god was some kind of ceremonial rain or water god, because this group of people was a lot of their agriculture and everything comes from the ocean and fishing, and there would have been a river here in the past, but we don't really know for sure. Scientists like to say ceremonial when they find things they don't know what
Yeah.
they are, right?
Ceremonial ritual.
Yeah, like they have pottery from a couple thousand years closer to our time, from these similar people, and they have spiders on them, and their water, like you know, pottery containers, so they assume that it's like a water god. But I don't know, maybe they have a really awesome story about spiders bringing down rain.
Yeah.
Maybe they called themselves the Spider Boys because they were like a gang, you know.
Yeah.
First of all, don't say I went as Spider-Man. I didn't go as Spider-Man. I was Man-Spider. Totally different.
We don't really know, right? Like, I mean, like, the first image we have of the Jesus character is, like, graffiti of somebody making fun of
the donkey-headed one, right?
Calling him a donkey, basically. It's graffiti, right? So, like, yeah. I think sometimes anthropologists assume everything is very kind of like sincere
and has like an important meaning behind it
and sacred, but sometimes we do stupid stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, like if anthropologists in the future saw what we do, like would they understand what dick butt meant? Like
there's a really good book about this. What is it called? It's like a satirical book. It's like Archaeology of a Motel or something, mm-hmm. where like they had archaeologists dig up like a motel, like future archaeologists, like thousands of years in the future.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And in the book, they're like, they've got like a toilet seat and said it was like a ceremonial crest or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's essentially like them going through a motel and going through all these weird objects. Yeah, because
a toilet seat is like the yoke that you put on an ox. So a leader would wear it around his neck to symbolize that he was carrying the burden for his people.
Stop. This is making too much sense. Yeah, see,
it's so easy to build these connections, you know? Like, but I just thought this was a fantastic story. Unfortunately, a lot of the actual image of this spider knife wielding god was destroyed by the farmer.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, so we don't exactly know like how much of this he knew he was destroying or not, you know, and if he didn't necessarily have permission to be excavating this particular area. I mean, I'm sure he's just wanting to make his farm to make money, so I'm not trying to diss the guy, but it's really unfortunate because there's so much stuff lost in our past, and you really need to be careful when you're in these kind of like ancestral areas digging around,
right?
And you can really destroy stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we talked about this. It's like that was it Monsters Inc.
It's a musical. Yeah, put that thing back where it came from, or so help me and
yeah,
whenever you find something, leave it.
Yeah,
in context of it, don't bury it or anything. Just
because archaeology and paleontology, anthropology, a lot of it's about being careful. You know, it's not Indiana Jones. The Nazis are not going to be out on your tail. You can't just grab stuff out of places and then destroy them afterwards.
Yeah.
And so you had a story that you wanted to talk about?
I did. Well, you brought this up to me. It's the story of these. Who exactly are these people? These Bigfoot researchers who reportedly found a Bigfoot thumb bone. And they have a video of themselves on a website, and they're like, "We got a thumb bone right here."
Where did they find it?
In Florida, in like a creek or something.
A swamp squatch.
Maybe it's what is that one? The skunk ape.
Yeah, the skunk ape. That's right. Yeah.
And they're like, yep, this is best evidence of Bigfoot. And they went on a sort of tangent about like the government covering up Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
and yeah, as far as I can tell, it looks like I'm not the biggest bone expert, but it looks like a finger bone, like a phalange of maybe like a bear or maybe even like a person.
Yeah, my first thought was, yeah, cool bear bone.
Yeah, it looks like finger bones in a lot of animals look very, very similar.
Sure.
So it's hard to like identify it directly, but the odds of it being like a Bigfoot unidentified creature in Florida of all places, it's pretty slim, I'd say.
Yeah, especially so where did they find it? Were they digging or was it at the surface?
They did not go into that. I think they I can pull it up. I don't know. In the video, they just kind of were like, we found it in the creek. So I'm assuming it might have washed out on like the shore of somewhere.
Yeah, that's a very important part. If you do find something, you know, the area you found it in tells an important part of its story.
Right. You can use that to date the age of it and stuff and find more bones, hopefully.
Yeah. So like when you just remove all that context from it, it devalues what you found.
Right.
So.
That's exactly it. When you find, so Native American bones are really common in the United States, especially in the East Coast. There's a lot of just burials all over the place. And whenever you do like a highway extension or like a building project, you have to hire archaeologists to excavate and make sure that there's no important ceremonial bones or Native American bones, anything like that. It's really important. And odds are a lot of people are going to find it on their property. Just happenstance. Best thing to do is probably leave it where it is and call your local government people. I know that sounds suspicious, like it's like agents or anything. No, it's just archaeologists.
Yeah, so the black helicopters will come down to make sure that
they'll go, whoa, there's Bigfoot family buried here.
I always thought that was an interesting apologetic from Bigfoot true believers that think that the reason why we don't have any remains is that
they bury them,
but wouldn't that make it so that they fossilize more and
it's another problem,
because scavengers wouldn't find them then, so we'd have more intact skeletons,
right? I think it's a more of a dodging the question kind of thing, where it's like, oh, they just hide them, they're really good at hiding. They use like evidence of like bears going to like holes and stuff when they feel sick. Okay, and dying in like holes.
So we'll find Bigfoot holes then.
Right. It's like a moving the goalposts. That's what it's like.
Because you're basically saying that there are evidences of things we do know happening. Therefore, that there's an explanation for not having evidence. It's like, okay, but if this kind of phenomena creates, you know, these impressions, we should have those impressions at least to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. With this finger bone that was discovered. I'm hoping that these guys, if they really are feeling like it's Bigfoot bone, they could test the DNA and we could use that.
That'd be pretty fantastic. Good.
Yeah, there's there's always like a Bigfoot DNA story coming out.
Yeah, always.
And you never hear the end of it. You never hear like it was just a mistake. You don't really hear that.
The only one that I remember like explicitly hearing the end of was when the people found this suit and it was like dead animals.
I remember that. The pig, it was like a monkey suit with like a pig stuffed in it.
Yeah, because I think the ending of that was like more incredible than the beginning. So that's why
like that these guys were, like, I don't know, we got arrested or something like that. I don't know. Ridiculous. I have to look up that story. It was a weird story.
Foolish behavior is what that is. So we did see a movie this week that featured a giant ape.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did.
And he fought some kind of possible lizard creature.
This is Rampage with
Rock. We saw Rampage with the Rock.
With the Rock.
We did like it. end of review. No, but Godzilla vs. King Kong came out, which is one of the first big movies towards the tail end of the pandemic here. We're not out of the woods yet on that stuff, so please wear your mask. But you know, we're working on getting towards the end, and so Godzilla vs. King Kong came out. I know a lot of people are just wanting to see a big stupid movie, and we sure got a big stupid movie, so. I really liked it, actually.
Here's the thing: is I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as a lot of other people on Twitter and like my friends seem to have liked it.
So, are you a Godzilla King Kong fan?
Yeah, I liked. I watched the entire more recent franchise leading up to this movie because I saw King of the Monsters in movie theaters a couple of years back, and then I saw King Kong Skull Island for the first time like probably like 2 months ago, and then I saw the Gareth Edwards Godzilla movie a few months ago as well, and they're pretty good. I enjoyed it. I think King of Monsters is probably my favorite one because it's really goofy.
Yeah, I like that one the best too, plus just Mothra and Ghidorah in it,
so yeah, I like seeing King
better Ghidorah on default. So this movie, we're not going to talk about this like as a pop culture film review. We're going to talk about like the monsters and science and stuff in the movie. Mm. You know, if somebody wants to hear like a film criticism, you know, go to Red Letter Media or something.
Yeah.
But generally, I like the movie because I'm a Godzilla fan. It was fun and stupid, but fun. One of the biggest ideas, though, in this universe that they've kind of grounded everything around is this old idea of Hollow Earth. And I mentioned to you the other day that, there was Hollow Earth and King of Monsters. And you like kind of forgot almost. You're like, there was.
There was one line from the guy with like the glasses, like the comic relief guy. He was like, I was right about the Hollow Earth theory. That's all I remember from it.
Yeah, and then they had like the Atlantis thing down there or something.
Oh my God, I forgot about the Atlantis thing. Yeah, where they had the big Sumerian statues and stuff.
Yeah, God, oh, they made a little bed for Godzilla. He had a little.
They nuked him. Okay, I remember. It's all coming back. It's all coming back to me.
So Hollow Earth was an idea that like has basis in popular scientists of the past. Like one of the first people to formally propose it was Edmund Halley, who's the Halley's Comet guy, right? He was trying to work out some flaw he saw in magnetism, and so he basically like, hey, maybe there's hollow that solves it. And you know, people kind of talked about that for a while and didn't give it much credence. And then this dude in like 1818 around there basically like said that there absolutely is a hollow earth, and he made this big decree where he's like, I declare that the earth is hollow and habitable, and I pledge my life to support this. And
whoa.
Yeah, he was very vested in it, and he he ran a big campaign about it and wrote about it. He was kind of like, I don't know, like the Alex Jones of this thing, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
the earth's hollow.
Maybe that's hollow not earth. Fair to the guy. They're turning the freaking earth hollow. He actually got Congress to vote on an expedition in like the 1820s. That Congress voted it down.
Thank goodness.
But there was a vote. An actual where did
they
vote.
Go? Where did they go?
So just like in the King Kong movie, right, where they go to the pole, and in the poles, there's a hole that goes down to the earth.
Oh, right? God.
So this idea in the movie isn't just them being fantastical. This is an actual idea. People believe that there were two polar entryways to the hollow earth, and that's how you do it. And so that's where the expedition would have gone.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So like these aren't just, you know, random,
because it was reused in Journey to the Center of the Earth with Jules Verne.
Which and that's like 1860s, right? So that's like 40 years later.
Yeah. So and I guess that's where we get the idea of like dinosaurs and stuff living in the hollow earth.
Yeah, and some of that is because of we're at this kind of like post-colonialism point in Britain and the West, right? Where we have kind of like gone into Africa and seen what we could see. And so a lot of Western, you know, white people basically were wanting more adventure, more places to go. And so this kind of fiction was like, oh, there's dinosaurs here, or there's monsters here. Cause you know, we found the silverbacks, and that was kind of like the last large creature that they were looking for and found. So I think a lot of that kind of like their dinosaurs there comes from that stuff.
Yeah. The idea was like that if there's the dinosaurs got like trapped under there or something along those lines, I'll have to reread it.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have in the 1920s, Edgar Rice Burroughs at the Earth's core, when they go to the Earth's core and you have the whole, like, humans are controlled by pterodactyls that have psychic powers and stuff.
That was a jump right there.
Yeah, these are the Pellucidar novels. And I loved in the King Kong movie when we go to the center of the Earth, which is through Portal in Antarctica, you do see a bunch of pterosaur-looking things flying around.
Yeah, that is true. You see, they're kind of like the pterosaurs that were in Skull Island.
Yeah, so I...
was that a reference to the book, to the novel?
I thought it was a little Pellucidar thing, but I don't know if it was. But they went to Hollow Earth and there was a bunch of pterosaurs. So I was like, hey, I know that.
Hey, that's awesome. All right.
So the whole center of the Earth idea like has this long history of being kind of scientific in the beginning as a, you know, a hypothesis to solve a different problem. And then it becomes like something people are really invested in, and then it becomes science fiction. And now it's basically, you know, just kind of irrelevant. Although there is an increase in belief in it. And I believe somebody died trying to prove it right a couple years ago.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, have you seen the, I know that it might be like associated with like, you ever hear of Mel's Hole?
Not off the top of my head. No, actually.
It's you ever listen to Coast to Coast? It's like this conspiracy. Yeah. Back in like the 90s, they had like this guy call in, and his name was Mel, and he like reported, I think he was in Oregon or Washington or something like that. And he was like, I got this hole in my backyard, and it's really deep, or not backyard, maybe it was a little further, but it was like a portal to like the bottom of the earth or the center of the earth. And he reported like people like dumping cows and stuff in it. It was really crazy. And then like, so he was saying that. He called in like three times, and each time he was like, the government's trying to take my hole. Like, it's really kind of weird. and at one point he talked like about like this like creepy bloody fetus seal climbing out of the hole and like speaking to them telepathically.
I don't like this guy. He has a weird imagination.
Mel's Hole's great, isn't it? Yeah. Mel's, I love the name Mel's Hole. And yeah, and the host of Coast to Coast kept on trying to get him to send pictures of it and stuff. Sure. And like his excuses for why he couldn't get a picture kept on getting crazier and crazier. Like at one point he said that he was able to receive like a coin, and the coin had a dime or something, and it had a president on it, I don't know which one, and it had like the year 1945, and he was saying that it was like an alternate history coin.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, check out Mel's Hole.
I like the Coast to Coast episode when the guy says that he's flying in Area 51 on like a cheap plane that he has, and he's like calling in from. He's like, "Oh, they're gonna shoot me down." And I'm
what? I saw the one where a guy calls in and says that he's like, "We need to get away from the high population areas. You need," and he gets cut off. Goes shh, and he gets cut off. He's like crying. Oh no! Yeah, I like the conspiracy stuff. That was a digression.
Oh yeah, for sure. We could probably talk about that for 40 minutes. But there was a lot of, so other than just the Hollow Earth stuff, you know, there was a bunch of kind of like, I don't know, would you call it speculative biology? Even just the weird monsters that were down there.
There was a lot of.
So there's the floating snake things.
There was like, yeah, they look like sort of, what's it called? They look like gliding snakes. There's kind of snakes that look like that, where like they can stretch out their ribs and flatten out, and they can glide a little bit.
How could they even fly like that?
It's really, they're using the inverted gravity of the Hollow Earth.
I suppose. I mean,
they're really thin. Their bones are really hollow. Which means Kong should have just punched him, and they should have shattered into 1,000 pieces.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, because like Ghidorah flies, he has wings. Mothra flies, he has wings, right?
Yeah.
Godzilla's atomic monster spits out atomic breath. Okay, I buy it. Like, I don't know.
That's true, yeah. Okay. At that point, I have to criticize literally everything. Yeah. Yeah, there were like these... So when I saw the trailer, I thought that was going to be Quetzalcoatl. Like, oh, because I know on the map, they show like a bunch of monsters, and Quetzalcoatl is one of them. But I guess not. I guess we don't know. We haven't seen them yet.
They didn't have too many of their monsters. Like, I know you really wanted to see Behemoth.
I was wanting to see Behemoth, and I wanted to see Tywin. He's not a monster.
Behemoth is the
like, mammoth looking one.
Mammoth looking one. Yeah, that's like I said, that Thomas Jefferson kind of thought a mammoth might look like. And they kind of took this like ignorant drawing he made and turned it into a monster. Which one was the Tywin one?
Well, Tywin Lannister was the bioterrorist guy from the last movie.
Oh, okay.
King Ghidorah's skull. And that,
oh, yeah. King Ghidorah's. No, King Ghidorah's school came in.
Sorry, he did come in. Tywin didn't come in. We don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, so they have like Ghidorah's skull, which is very clean, by the way. They did a good job of cleaning it.
They got a good taxidermist for that thing.
Yeah, and they turned it into a genetic computer.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they have genetic memory in the movie, too, they mentioned before this, even, which is very Dune.
Yeah.
And... yeah, that was another wild concept, a whole nother pseudo science concept that just like gets a little bit of reference in the movie. There's just whole much like random.
They thought of this weird conspiracy kind of stuff. Like it's where it's like, I call it like gobbledygook. Okay, sorry.
So yeah, some things in the film that were pretty pseudo scientific was the guy made an anti-GMO comment, which really bugged me.
That was the apple. He was
I mean, he did take a bite of the apple afterwards, so I thought it was kind of like a joke. But then
from that apple? What, he brought the apple in and didn't want the guy to bite the apple. See, I thought there was going to be like a flash drive hidden in the apple or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
sorry. Yeah, anyways.
But then later he's talking about how fluoride in the water makes us docile.
I threw up at that. I got irrationally angry because the girl, what is her name, the Stranger Things girl, didn't like dispute it, didn't like say like she was like, yeah, I believe that too.
That's the thing that
it was like, what?
So one of the reasons I made my comic after the Gold Rush was like skeptics in media are almost always proven wrong, and like true believers are almost always right.
Right. You know?
And they did the same thing in this movie where the guy was believes all these like outlandish and dangerous in real world circumstance conspiracy theories,
He was washing himself with bleach. Bleach,
yeah.
So you're like, that's going to like not be good.
The movie it textually kind of makes him out to be silly, but when it comes to all the plot relevant things, like
he was right.
Godzilla and all the kaiju stuff, he's right. You know, so like you can't really have it both ways.
Because... Well, and the fact that they had I forgot her name. The girl, Bobby Brown, whatever her name is. Yeah. The fact that she also believed in it sort of justified his belief in.
Yeah, because she didn't. I mean, like, he's saying the whole Nazis fluoride thing, and like fluoride, it keeps your teeth strong. People, you need fluoride in your water. You know, like Greenpeace and different groups have been against fluoride in the past. So there's like real anti-science groups that do this. So like this has real world problems. It'd be like if he said anti-vaccine thing in the movie.
Right. Know? And she and they kind of laughed about it. And you're like, whoa.
So like especially when we just had a bunch of people die because of science denial or lack of commitment to science. Really don't need to be making anti-science jokes in your monster movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's fine if it's like a stupid anti-science thing and it's in like Hollow Earth where it's easy to be sci-fi, but like fluoride has real world consequences. So.
Yeah. There's like, I feel like there's a gradient of conspiracy theories that are like where they're harmless to like pretty harmful. There's like have you heard of the no real forests conspiracy where like mountains are giant tree stumps and stuff.
I wish I believed in that. It sounds awesome.
Devil's Tower is like a giant oak tree I watched the full video. There's a YouTube video where the person breaks it down and they never talk about who cut down the tree.
I just imagine Paul Bunyan.
Paul Bunyan. The kaiju called Paul Bunyan.
I just imagine a headline of geologists hate this man. Also, I protest to Paul Bunyan being a kaiju because he's not a monster.
He's not a, okay. Yeah. What about the bull? Blue bull?
Yeah, Babe. The blue ox. See, Babe, I don't know. You got to be a monster. You got to have some weird teeth or some weird stuff going on.
He's blue. That's not normal. Okay,
blue's weird. Got it. Sold. You win. See, that's a kaiju. If Paul Bunyan was green, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. Like Jolly Green Giant's a kaiju, right?
Okay.
He's half man, half green bean.
That would be great. They pull like a Space Jam 2 and just bring in all these famous giant pop culture icons into the monsterverse.
I'm so in the next movie. Watch that trailer.
Oh, you didn't watch it? Oh, yeah. Better. Yeah, I don't know. It looks like Ready Player One Part 2.
Is Bill Murray in it?
No. Or yeah, I don't think so.
And I don't care.
Newman? Is Newman in it?
Newman?
Tell the world my story.
Hello, Newman.
Hello, Newman.
See, these are the people I want to see. So you watched the movie on your laptop, you said?
So I watched the movie. My setup was probably not the best. Maybe that's why I'm not like I liked it. I just wasn't like electrified by it. And I think that's probably because I watched it on my laptop at like 3 a.m. on like a work night.
Yeah, John Lynch would not John Lynch. Sorry.
On your David phone.
Lynch. Yeah, David Lynch would come at your ass. John Lynch is the GM of my football team. Different person.
Now, if you're playing the movie on a telephone, you will never in a trillion years experience the film. You'll think you have experienced it, but you'll be cheated. It's such a sadness that you think you've seen a film on your fucking telephone. Get real.
So we went to the theater because they had like super special COVID theater safety rules set up at our like local one. So like we're risk it. We sat in the back. There wasn't that many people there, but I definitely wanted to watch in the theater because they got the big speakers and I don't know. It was really fun to watch. Maybe I wouldn't have liked it if I'd seen like 15 movies this year. I wouldn't have liked it as much, but I just like that they threw so many random sci-fi concepts into the movie.
It was like slapping you. It was just like, oh, you're like before you even recover, there was a new concept thrown at you.
Yeah, because I mean, like the whole like Ghidorah Mechagodzilla genetic connection thing is kind of like some Acura Final Fantasy VII that like cyberpunk Shintoism stuff from the 90s. And then Hollow Earth, obviously, is like 19th century sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
And so there's just all these random things just popping up. And then all of a sudden, Godzilla and King Kong are fighting, and I'm just like, let's go. Keep throwing more stuff in.
Godzilla burned a hole through the center of the earth.
Oh my God. Think about that.
It happened so quickly. I was like, wait, what?
King Kong's like, I'm going to sit on this throne. I'm the king. And Godzilla just enters his DMs by just shooting fire right through the earth, man.
And he cuts through it, like, very quickly. Like, Godzilla. Whoa.
Also, there's some kind of, like, 2001 Space Odyssey black hole kind of thing around the center of the earth.
Right? Oh, I thought of that too. I was wondering, like, if they were implying that, like, the Hollow Earth was created by, like, an extraterrestrial race or advanced race or something.
Yeah, because there was, like, this energy field around it.
Right.
Right? So it's not just, like the old Hollow Earth theories where you're going to walk just down a hole there with some good boots on. Like, you're not making it.
Yeah, they went through, they took Gwen their flying cars, and it was like, yeah, they went through like time and space. It was, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, and it looked like 2001 where it was flying by.
Just a bunch of color and abstract stuff.
Yeah.
But it was pretty cool. It was interesting to see them have so many different sci-fi concepts, and the fighting was fun. I kind of wish that the Godzilla versus King Kong fight at the end against Mechagodzilla was longer.
Yeah, it seemed like it was kind of, I wish it was longer, because that was probably like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah,
like
well,
that.
Godzilla fights Mechagodzilla, does okay. Mechagodzilla's like, I have a million weapons, lasers coming out of my knee. And Godzilla's like, well, that's bullshit. And so we defibrillate King Kong, which is kind of funny, because the second or third King Kong movie is all about him getting a heart transplant. So, like, a significant percentage of King Kong movies involve his heart problems.
He's got an awful heart. You kind of expect that from such gigantism. A giant creature. Yeah. Pumping that blood to his head.
Yeah, definitely. And so they defibrillate King Kong. Oh my God, the dialogue there was so bad. They did that sci-fi thing when someone's like, hey, do you think we could reverse the flux capacitor using quantum tachyons? And someone's like a balloon filling up with too much hot air? They're like, yeah, do you think that would work? And then they did it. It's just like, it's like what would happen in Galaxy Quest if they were talking about how bad sci-fi writing is.
Yeah.
But they did it right in the movie, and I laughed in the theater. I couldn't help it.
What did I laugh that was like just so ridiculous? There was one thing like that where it was like, what is going, what was the thing with she needed to get that, so there was the villain guy who was evil businessman.
Yeah, so there was Bad Mustachio, and
there was his daughter,
Bad Hot Girl, who had like three lines.
She had three lines, and she got the energy. So they needed the new element or whatever that was, the purple stuff or the blue stuff,
unobtainium.
They needed unobtainium.
Yeah,
they needed just unobtainium now. Yeah.
She
emailed it to her dad. What was that about?
They got the molecular structure of it or something. I don't know. And then they literally
synthesize it real quickly.
From the center of the Earth through the 2001 Space Odyssey black hole, through, I assume, the mantles there or whatever the Earth is made out of, and then to its computer in like 45 seconds. If anyone who works at Comcast is watching this, why isn't my internet like that?
Okay. That reception's really good down there.
Because, I mean, that's upload speed, too. That's not download speed. That's ridiculous. My upload speed is nowhere close to this. And I live in a metropolitan area.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a bit ridiculous. But whatever. She got squished like a Coke can.
It's whatever. Yeah. She got crushed.
There were giant bat people.
It was like they look like Mitch McConnell. They were like owl creatures.
Well, they have like raptor faces, right? Because they have the long sloped beaks.
Yeah.
I think they had three toes, but they were like bat in every other state. I don't know what family or clade they're from.
Yeah, I think they just throw stuff together.
Who knows? Like, what's Godzilla? Godzilla has three toes. So I guess
Godzilla also has gills, which is really interesting.
Yeah, so he's like a bird, right? Because he has three toes, but then he has gills.
He has gills, and then he's also supposedly like really ancient, like Permian age, if not earlier. So it's weird.
So likely, if Godzilla is an actual biological creature, any similar phenotypes he'd have to modern creatures would just be examples of convergent evolution, I assume.
Yeah, yeah, because he's just so ancient. And I think, like, people have looked at his skull. Like, I think his skull was in promotional material or something, and it looked a lot like a mammal skull, which was really interesting. He's a mismatch of stuff.
That's because he's the main character.
yeah. We got to make him more...
That's the main character effect on evolution. You have to make them look more like the species you're telling the story to.
That's true. That's true. I like a King Kong analysis, like where he fits in on the... I guess he's a big gorilla.
Yeah, he's just a silverback, I guess.
Well, it's interesting because Skull Island is in... I know it moved location,
south of Hawaii, apparently?
It's like Easter Island where it's in the middle of nowhere. So I guess, like, in that case, that would really mess things up evolutionarily because I think, like, he might be closest related to, like, orangutans and stuff like that. I don't know. It's an interesting question right there.
It was. I thought it was disappointing they decided to kill off all the people that lived
they,
on the island.
They killed off all the I wrote down their name, the Iwis.
This indigenous group of people. I know they're made up, but still, they just get killed off. I just kind of felt like that was a bit.
I felt like it was lazy and convenient. I think that's one of the things I was like, oh, come on.
Like I realized they have interesting. The young actor, you know, and she did a good, she's probably the best actor in the movie, quite honestly.
I liked her part. Her parts were probably, her and King Kong were probably, the strongest part of the movie.
They should have cut out all the other human characters.
Oh, yeah,
really
definitely.
Didn't need them. Just
the
her.
The podcaster.
Yeah, okay. But I apologize for not knowing her name, but the young girl who did the sign language, was that ASL? Do you know? My mom was.
I have no idea if that was accurate or not.
Yeah, but so she was doing sign language with Kong. I thought she was cool. I liked her a lot. I kind of just, you know, like removing the, I know they're not a real indigenous culture, but they have a lot of indigenous tropes in them that Westerners would put into an indigenous fictional group, right? So like, I kind of don't like them just genociding them off camera.
Yeah, there was definitely there's something in anthropology, or at least something that my old professor called it, was called the Ferngully effect, where you turn indigenous people into like one with the forest.
Yeah, so like
connect with animals and stuff really well.
One of my buddies, Crow Song, we worked on a couple comics together. You know, he's an indigenous artist and writer. Like, we often talk about how a lot of times, like, you know, Americans, when they talk about Native Americans, they basically turn them into elves.
Yes.
You know, like they act like they have a magical connection with the forest. The same thing with cryptozoology.
Navi Avatar.
People. Yeah. Like, cryptozoology people are like, oh, well, Native Americans had a story about a monster in the woods, so therefore Bigfoot's real.
Right. It removes that they had their own cultures and religions, and I don't know. They couldn't just make things up themselves.
Yeah. First of all, they're humans. So pareidolia works on them too. Second of all, a lot of the stories have metaphorical meaning. People don't necessarily always believe their cultural stories.
Yeah.
And then also, like, a lot of those stories, the creatures, like, disappear or reappear and only appear on certain times. They don't treat them like they're a biological entity.
Right. That's what you'll see. We'll probably talk about this later when we get into Champ. It's like, I've seen a lot of people use, like, Native American religious beliefs and mythology about, like, what is it, the water leopard or water lynx or something, and they use it like, oh, that's evidence of a plesiosaur in the Great Lakes or something. Well, maybe not. It could just be just something that, like,
well, sure,
it's like
let's get into it. So basically, I wanted to call this segment where we talked about pop culture and negging dinosaurs, but we don't have to call it that. But yeah, so, you know, that's basically our look at King Kong versus Godzilla. I thought it was pretty good. I think
Yeah,
I think we both thought there was some dumb science in it, but then some fun dumb science as well.
It was very fun. It was a fun movie.
It's cool. A lot of, if you're the kind of person who likes to go deep dives on subjects, you know, look at all the different weird concepts they brought up, and then, you know, go down a Wikipedia hole and learn some stuff. And I think it makes the movie more interesting if you do that. So
I hope we go back to the ecosystem within the Hollow Earth, because we only saw a very small amount of stuff.
Yeah, I'd be a buyer for a movie that was like 2 hours long in there with no human characters, no dialogue.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I know what's the Peter Jackson King Kong?
Yeah.
Where there's like a book where there's like, they have a whole mapped out ecosystem and ecology that's like filled with all these sort of dinosaurs that survived and evolved after the extinction have changed, and they all lost, connected
and lost their feathers, apparently.
Yes, it's very convenient that they lost their feathers and looked exactly like how Jurassic Park depicts them. What a stroke of luck that was.
Jurassic Park is like a blessing and a curse for dinosaurs. It's like the best dinosaur movie that's ever going to be made. So people just love it, but they want dinosaurs to look just like that.
And it's like when they made the Zilla in the 1990s with the
Zilla, man.
Oh, sorry, Zilla, where they had like the little, they had Godzilla have kids and they were like the size of raptors.
Yeah.
And they were just ripping off Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Oh. Sad. So, Monster Quest.
Witnesses around the world report seeing monsters. Are they real or imaginary? Science searches for answers. On Monster Quest.
Real or imaginary? Science. Or whatever he says. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. So, you may remember the show from the big purple eye. That would appear. That was their
changed it to the green eye over time.
How could they do that? Purple eye. That's like that.
Back in my day, Monster Quest had a purple eye. They changed it from like an ape eye to like a lizard eye. Like,
well,
see,
the purple eye, it could be Bigfoot or it could be a black dog. It could be anything, you know.
Werewolf.
Yeah, werewolf
episode.
Yeah. So basically, the show is they take mostly American, but sometimes international monster stories.
When the budget allows, international. Yeah.
And then what the show does is it picks a couple lucky archaeologists whose name got drawn from a hat, and it sends them on a field trip. They get some nice camera equipment. They get to meet a local kooky guy, and they go on a little field trip.
They meet an elderly person who's like always above 56 years old. Yeah. And it's like, oh, hello.
So our first episode is Champ, which is basically the Loch Ness Monster of North America, I suppose.
Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
In Vermont.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders. Yep. Monster. Yeah, that's all I know about Vermont, is Bernie Sanders.
I'm once again asking you for a clear photograph. they go through the first sightings. They use the phrase that I actually wrote down because it's so beautiful. Ooh. According to one version of history.
What? Yeah, that's amazing. I missed that.
I was like, well, what a great sentence.
Well, I thought, so here, I wrote this down in my notes. I called it the proto-ancient aliens.
Yeah, definitely.
I felt like this was I was surprised how balanced it was. But you could see the seeds of what was to come in the History Channel. You could see that eventually they would get rid of the skeptic interviews and just focus entirely on the sort of kooky people.
Yeah, so like basically you have sightings from a long time ago, kind of.
Mm-hmm. You know, they always use something like a Spanish explorer in 1611 or something.
So, you know, there's sightings, but I mean, what can you make of those as evidence, right? Like if somebody in the 1700s or 1800s is like, oh, I was on this lake, I saw a large creature. You know, we're not saying they didn't see something in the water, but what does that help us? It doesn't really get us anywhere.
Yeah.
You know,
well, used Samuel de Champlain's like first sighting. And if you actually look back, then they fixed themselves later on the episode. I took notes and I was like, that's wrong. But then they corrected themselves. So the Champ origin story is that this, I think English explorer, maybe French. French. I guess that last name is a teller.
It's a giveaway.
The French.
He was exploring the region and he supposedly saw like a big snake creature with a horse head or something come out of the water. But that's actually like an apocryphal story. If you actually look at his stuff, he talks about like fish. And his odds are he just was describing like, off the description is completely different. He described something that's like 4 feet or 5 feet long and like as thick as his thigh. And it's probably like an alligator gar or something.
Or a sturgeon.
Yeah, alligator gar. Yeah. Long nose like gar, something like that. Sturgeon.
So like, yeah, a lot of these.
They're misquoted.
Yeah, just like for the Loch Ness Monster, for example, the stories of like saints seeing it from a long time ago, if you actually look up the sources, they don't quite say what people want them to say.
Right. You know? With Loch Ness, there's Saint Columba, where but the thing is, if you look at his history, is he essentially sees monsters everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, he fought like a giant whale at one point.
They're out to get him.
Yeah. They're really angry with these monsters hate Christians, man.
He stole something from the Monsterverse and they were on his
tail. He's the alpha.
So basically we have a bunch of old possible sightings from the past, which if you look into them, they're not quite as exciting, but that's kind of the premise. There's people mention large aquatic something in the water sometimes. You know, that's kind of like your general premise. And then kind of the main thing that made this explode was this one photograph, just like the Surgeon General photograph, which they show in this again, even though they know it's not real. Fake. And they kind of mentioned that, but like, why keep showing it then?
Well, the editing in this was really bad, because at one point they start talking about plesiosaurs and they throw up an image of a mosasaur skeleton. Yeah.
Well, that's all the same stuff.
For some reason. And I'm like, whoa, I was cringing so hard. I was like, oh. The editor was like, he's got to meet those deadlines here. Prehistoric sea monster. They're downloaded off of Wikimedia Commons.
Yeah.
Stock photo.
So you know a bit about this photograph, right?
Yes, the Mansi, I'm saying that right, photograph?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they talk, there's several things that they do not mention in the episode.
First of all,
the lady, Mansi, I think she's died since then. She had cancer or something like that.
That's too bad.
But her story changed over time. There were contradictory details with later retellings that she did.
Yeah. That's how human memory works. You know, you don't remember the original time you saw something. You remember yourself remembering it, you know, so.
Right. Yeah. So in this version of events, I think in some version, she says that she was very ambivalent to taking the photo. She was like very emotionally calm while taking the photo. And then in this, they say that she like collapsed to her knees and was like in complete fear and stuff. And there's several other details that change between accounts. So maybe she just exaggerated. That's not exactly like a debunking, but it happens with these stories.
I always thought it was odd she took one photo, even though she said it was there for like 5 minutes.
She said it was there for like, 5 or 6 minutes. And another detail that it was kind of weird is she was either, I've heard conflicting accounts, she was either unwilling to show the location of where the photo was taken or had forgotten where it was taken.
I find the forgetting to be odd.
Yeah, that she was like, I have no idea where it was. Like, she's like, oh, we were on the American side of the lake, but I don't remember. Like, that's a problem because we can't estimate the size of how big it was and stuff.
I'm a fisherman, and let me tell you, I know the spot of the lake where I've caught every fish that I've caught.
Right.
You know, so if I was hanging out with a Loch Ness monster, I would know where that was.
Right. Well, you would know about this stuff. So it's weird that she didn't take multiple photos. Weird that she didn't record sort of the location. Interestingly, she does not provide the photo negative, like the actual.
Yeah, which is, they never do.
They never do. And the thing is that the photograph is damaged. There's like scratches and all kinds of stuff. And I think, I'll have to look it up again, but I think she didn't report it straight away. I think it was in like a photo album for several years, which damaged it even further more.
Do we know if the negative exists?
We don't know if the negative. She's never provided a negative, and then she's of course deceased, so we don't know. I've heard that it's plausible that she just lost it,
but
it's such an important picture.
Sure, contextless. Like removing that context and looking at the photo itself, do you find the photo convincing of anything?
When you're really young, you find it really convincing because like how the neck's arched and stuff looks really, really cool, and it's looking away from you. It's very dramatic. But
when I was 9 years old, it was absolutely convincing.
Yeah. No, it's I kind of consider it one of like the most convincing cryptid images out there, period. Sure. But
because it has the thing that you want in it. Yeah. Right? It has that swan like elegant moving down neck, and it has the hump.
Yeah, exactly. It has that very distinct, striking pose that you see in a lot of these lake monsters. But after seeing it now, like it's a very far away photo of a still object, and we don't have several pictures. Yeah. At least with the surgeon's photograph, we have like two photos of it at least.
So Skeptical Inquirer, I believe their hypothesis was that it was a log, which I find pretty compelling. Pretty sure it's a stick, a log. Mm. You know, I've been on the lake, and sometimes that happens. You see logs drifting by. That definitely is a real thing that happens on lakes. You see it all the time. Mm. And I don't think it's an animal. She doesn't even mention it like moving too much, right?
Yeah, so. She doesn't really describe. She just says it floated up and then floated back down. Which is very kind of like you feel like you'd see the flippers moving or something like that. I don't know.
So, yeah. So assuming that, I mean, everyone wants to say it's always a plesiosaur or a mosasaur or whatever, but I mean, those hypotheses seem less likely to me than it being any other kind of unknown aquatic creature.
Right, like a big turtle or something.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I assume there's some specially evolved turtle in there more than I would that there's a 35 million year old creature in the lake.
Yeah. Even the hypothesis they put forward in this episode where they suggest that it's like a whale that was like trapped, like an inland whale.
Oh, yeah, because there's the lady in this video that is very committed to there being echolocation in the lake.
Yeah, and I looked it up, and I couldn't really find much information on what happened with that echolocation information. I found like a Vice article that talked about it. But it just said, like, we haven't really been able to identify what that sound was.
It's basically one person gathering this research.
So yeah.
I'm obviously not an expert on the validity of any of this research, but currently the scientific community is not, you know, responding to it very well.
So right. If there were inland marine mammals, like, if there was a... Because there are, like, river dolphins and stuff go up inland, but... If there was one, I don't think there's been a case of like things trapped in a lake. I know that in Russia, there's like this really, really massive lake that has like seals that were trapped in there from when there was an ocean. I don't think there's any examples of whales living in lakes or living inland, like trapped inland populations.
One thing I was thinking, lakes are basically inverse islands, right?
Mm.
Like, right? Because there's like they're surrounded by land and they're separated from the ocean. So, like, wouldn't a similar thing that happens on island evolution happen to lakes, to large predators like this?
Yeah.
They would get smaller?
They would probably, there would probably be I guess there might be island lake dwarfism within lakes.
Because lakes are basically kind of like reverse islands.
Yeah. The animals would definitely change and evolve. Like, a dolphin or I think they put forward the idea that it was like a beluga or something.
Yeah.
If a beluga got trapped in a population of belugas got trapped in a lake, you would expect them to be very, very different than belugas
they have
outside.
Less calories, and then they have less pressure to be larger, right? Because they have less predators of size. So you think that they would shrink over time.
I think so. Yeah, that would make sense. I just don't know if there would be enough food to sustain a population.
Oh, no, wouldn't. There wouldn't. but so the same thing with the plesiosaur or mosasaur, whatever a saur that they think that's in here, like they wouldn't be that big anymore. I don't think.
Right. If we're able to find, what the pygmy sperm whales, which are really, really small and incredibly rare. If we're able to find those in like the entire massive ocean, we should be able to find some inland whales in some lake in Vermont, like evidence of them. So those things.
Has there ever been an eDNA study? It's not mentioned, of course, in this.
I don't think so. No, I know there was one done in Loch Ness.
Yes.
They found eels, but I don't know of Lake Champlain.
Yeah, I mean Lake Champlain does have sturgeon, and sturgeon get quite large.
Mm.
I mean they're like a really old species that gets gigantic, and they have no bones. They're like weird. So if you see a sturgeon surfacing, which they don't do much because they're bottom feeders, it would be quite a strange sight. But nothing has this elongated gooseneck thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's very few things in nature, or very few things that I know that have like the gooseneck besides like birds and stuff.
And I believe you did a video right on how you believe that a plesiosaur couldn't even make that neck shape.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is so what paleontologists have found is that it's plesiosaur necks. They're really flexible at the end, but they're not flexible at the base. So they couldn't. So they could probably like curl their head around at the end, but they couldn't make the swan neck. They're just like, bone. Their anatomy wouldn't allow it.
Swans have that neck because they peck down and dig into the earth for worms and bugs and stuff. You know, but like. A plesiosaur doesn't do that, right? They glide and ambush.
Right.
They just wouldn't and need that.
I've heard people make the argument that like, oh, they evolved to look like a swan. So like at that point, you might as well just be advocating for a completely unknown animal. Well, yeah, like, well, why does it have to be a plesiosaur?
You're just continuing to add complexity because you need so many steps, and adding another step doesn't make it more likely. It's more likely that didn't happen.
Right. It's like the same problem that Munchelium Bembe and all that suffers, where they were based on...
Munchelium Bembe, if you don't know, of course, is a brontosaurus-like creature supposed to exist in the jungle.
But... Yeah, and in Africa, where they resemble something from pop culture at the time, like the reconstructions that have since become outdated. So we know that sauropods really didn't look like that necessarily. But
it's a Flintstones dinosaur.
It's a Flintstones dinosaur, so it's outdated, so it's stuck. And the Loch Ness Monster suffers from this too, where paleontologists used to think plesiosaurs could do the swan neck, but they've since found that they can't. So it's sort of trapped in this outdated model where we know that the real animal doesn't look like that, but that our artist depictions at the time look like that. So it's kind of, you see it a lot of times with like living dinosaur reconstructions.
It's a huge tale on these creatures. The fact that like when they look the way that the people of the time imagined them, which is right. Like kind of what I was saying, right? There's like this sense of like grief or longing for the wild, for the unknown. And then people just kind of see the shapes that they want to be out there.
Right. You That's know? Exactly right.
Yeah. So overall, the episode was kind of interesting. They had, I apologize to the older shaggy gentleman. I don't remember his name.
the monster hunter.
He was apparently very invested in the creature.
They cut it on the last day, they say, on the last day.
Yeah, they got him on this big boat, even though he's not really running the boat or anything. They just like have some people with a giant lure with the camera on it.
And then the fish lure comes back later. They reuse that in later episodes, I think.
And basically they put him on the boat to just say things about it, even though he's not running the show at all. But he's like, local guy who loves the monster is here, and he's on the case.
They interviewed that old lady who was like, oh, I saw two of them climb out near my window.
She said there was white ones, brown ones, green ones. She's very progressive about her view of champ. They caught the classic video of people pointing to the water.
Oh, I love those dramatic reenactments. Yeah. They have like the filter, the blue filter on them. Like, whoa, what's that?
Well,
kids,
you know,
get out of the water.
Yeah, or the people looking at the footage of the lure thing. There's, you know, the director's like, point to it and say something, and then
so they can get the commercial breaks where they're like, "Whoa, what's that?" And it goes, phew.
Yeah, and then they said that they were out on the lake for an extended number of days. I thought that was an interesting way to phrase that. Why?
So let's say several days or something.
Was it 3 days? Or why lie about the amount of days, man?
I think here's my theory. This might be slander. I think they go out there, they film the 10 minutes for the film, mm-hmm. for the show, and then go back in. my fan theory.
It was cold.
It was cold.
Nobody wants to be out there.
I really like the biologists and skeptics that they brought on. I think they actually gave some really good arguments.
They got someone from the Skeptical Inquirer. Another piece of technology I thought they had that was really like fantastic and great to see, and I thought of any technology is going to be able to capture a lake monster, it'd be this. It was the VHS player they showed.
I did not see a VHS player.
It's in the first 3 or 4 minutes. They straight out have a VHS player to catch this thing. And I was like, I think a VHS player could do it. You know, I believe in it. He's been down and out, but he was good back in the day, and I think he's ready for a comeback story.
There's speaking of which, like the dated kind of stuff. I love the early CGI, especially for the reenactments, where it's like
the plumpy flesh that looks like it's like filled up with air.
Yeah, I saw their little plesiosaur model, and it was like, that's awful. Like, it's not aerodynamic at all, or not aerodynamic, hydrodynamic. It's very lumpy, and yeah, you wouldn't expect that.
Well, this is the thing that everybody says about cryptids, so it's kind of boring to mention, but like, there had to, I mean, what's a healthy population is like 255, right?
Yeah, so they, she brings it up in this episode where it's like at the very, very least 50 individuals.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are species that can reproduce asexually and have large offspring, but they're normally not large predators.
Right, right. That's the thing, you know? People have used this for megalania. Like, they take the idea that some lizard, some like I think Komodo dragons can do parthenogenesis, which is where like the females reproduce by themselves or something along those lines.
Some frogs can.
So what they do is like, that's the reason why there's not too many of them, is the females are just reproducing by themselves. But they take out the idea that this is a thing that they don't do all the time. They do need some genetic variability. And yeah, that people don't when people talk about cryptids, they typically don't talk about like population sizes and the genetics that are required with it. Because
That's not fun. What's fun is that there's a monster in the lake and it has a name.
Oh, I know. But like, you know, when you have like endangered species, there's a point where like a species is functionally extinct, where there's just not enough of them because there's not enough genetic diversity. They're just going to get
like the white rhino.
That's the thing why it can be with populations that have like dozens of people in it. They're still very low. There
are dozens of us.
Take us seriously.
We demand to be taken seriously.
Oh, stop booing. There's nothing wrong with it. There are dozens of us. Dozens!
Yeah, it's like, I hope I don't bring it up constantly, but that's the problem with cryptids, is in order for them to not be seen all the time, there needs to be few of them. And the problem with there being few of them is that they don't have enough genetic diversity.
Yeah,
and
well,
it's not a stable population and stuff.
All the cryptids are large, charismatic megafauna.
You know,
they're not like little finches or beetles, because we do find new finches and beetles, even ones that we thought were extinct and haven't been seen for a couple hundred years. But we don't find new charismatic large megafauna.
Right. That's exactly the case. That's why...
Everyone wants to bring up the coelacanth, but I hate that damn fish. I'm tired of hearing about it, number one.
I am sick of hearing about the coelacanth.
Nobody cares about the big, ugly fish. But first of all, Western people forgot about it. The people who lived around it, they knew it was there. They just didn't care. Right. And then a Western scientist saw it and was like, oh, wow, cool. But nobody was looking for it. Like, it was not a big deal. It's an awesome find and everything. We can learn stuff from it. But it's not the same as a gigantic bipedal ape monster or, a plesiosaur or some kind of brontosaur in the jungle. It's just not the same thing.
Yeah. No, plesiosaur or not. Coelacanth is brought up literally every single cryptid discussion, especially with stuff that is prehistoric. And it neglects to mention that, like, we've since found fossils of coelacanths after the dinosaurs that kind of bridges that gap.
The whole thing about it being a living fossil is stupid. That's just how evolution works. Just because it's phenotype or, you know, it doesn't change doesn't mean it hasn't had evolutionary differences.
Right. Yeah, it's I'm sick of. Yeah, I am 100% with you. You're anti megalodon and anti coelacanth. Yeah.
We don't. We like possible reptiles in the water, maybe, but no coelacanths and no giant sharks.
Yeah.
Who's the guy who made the megalodon really fat?
Oh yeah, where we like the tubby sort of submarine looking megalodon.
I like that. It's a good jab back at them. Oh, you want to see megalodons being real? Well, they were stupid looking. So deal with that.
Yeah, Champ is one of those things that it's so adorable. I think the idea is adorable that it makes me sad to kick it to the curb like this.
I would love there to be lake monsters. Of all the creatures that could exist out in the world, I think lake monsters are the ones I most want to be real.
Yeah.
And Every time I go out fishing by the lake by myself, I think about lake monsters. You know, I love them. It's just they don't love me back. And that's the heartbreaking thing about it.
Yeah. If there were a cryptid that it wanted to be real, it would have to be something dumb like that. Something dumb like Mothman or something. It's just giant humanoid Mothman.
I can't start talking about Mothman. This podcast will go on forever.
Or one of the, like, or that big, like, there's like a South American, like, creature with like one eye and like a mouth where its chest is and stuff. Goofy.
So how would you rate this episode for Monster Quest? Like 1 out of 10.
I would rate it
graded on Monster Quest scale, not grading it against like Cosmos or Citizen Kane or something.
Oh, okay, against
Monster Quests, one episode's a 10. I don't know which one it is, and one's a 1. Where do you think this is going to be on the scale?
This rates on a scale of maybe like, this is a solid 7. I think this was a good start for a series, and it did what it had to do. It was good. It was short. It wasn't too bloated, and I liked how it gave a two sides of the argument kind of thing.
The plesiosaur looked a little bloated in the CGI. I think I'd agree with you. I'd give it a 7, and the reason why is I think it was bold of them not to start with Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, you know? It's something obscure that not too many people have heard about.
They started with a B-tier monster, and I respect that because I like the B-tier monsters.
Right.
You know, they got a good photo, right? Obviously, it's a log, but it's a really interesting looking log.
It's a beautiful log. It's an amazing log.
It's probably top 3 or 4 all-time logs. You know, like, if I was starting a website, www.bestlogs.com, it would be in the header profile, for sure. So it's up there in greatest logs. I don't know. The skeptical guy was there, gave a good take. They did their best on the PlayStation 2 graphics. You know, I like that they found a shaggy, weird local guy to pretend to be the captain of this expedition.
Yeah, I like how they found a grandma to talk about it.
Also, the nice scientist lady, who I thought was very reasonable and fair.
Trying to
explain how ecology works to these people. I like the shot of her just walking by the lake.
Yeah, she gave her explanation on like the windy side of the lake. Like, yeah. Oh, could we just do this in my office? Oh.
They didn't say any racist things about Native American myths, so that was
That's
nice.
That's right, they didn't. I was surprised.
I'm very thankful for that.
I was waiting for them to whip out like back in before in Native American times.
Yeah.
I'm worried as time goes on, we're going to see less and less of those skeptics.
Yeah, so, you know, it was kind of like the first big, weird, paranormal kind of show back in the day with Leonard Nimoy betraying his Spock persona by sharing a bunch of nonsense and illogic.
My dad showed me In Search Of, and I got some choice words.
It's very old. But it was very cool back in the day.
Yeah.
So that show, actually, if you watch it now, I think is more reasonable than you would imagine.
Okay.
You know, and Monster Quest, I think, is now more reasonable than people remember just because of how bad it's gotten lately.
Yes. Yes.
So you have things like actual, factual Megalodon is real episodes or movies, I guess, events on History Channel. You have mermaids are real stories on History Channel, right? So, like, things have gotten so bad that you watch Monster Quest and you're like, that wasn't too bad.
Right. You go into it and you're like, all right, compared to Mermaid Body Found, this wasn't straight up lying to my face. Like, yeah. The bar is so low nowadays.
I feel talked down to, but not lied to. And I'm okay with that. That's kind of bad.
It was good. It was definitely being very balanced. I'm just saying
we have an abusive relationship with History Channel.
Yes. I had to watch a full episode of Ancient Aliens, and it was painful. Like, this was fun, that was painful. It was hour and like 30 minutes or hour long. How it felt like forever. And it was so bloated and like, oh my gosh, you just stop thinking at a certain point.
So if people like this podcast, they might want to check out YouTube videos from Knowing Better. And then is it Alternative History, right? Was the other one?
Yeah, Alternative History Hub.
They did a cool dive into Ancient Aliens. I believe Alternate History watched every episode.
He watched, I was messaging him as he went along with it, and he watched every single episode, and he was in a lot of pain, I can tell.
Yeah, he probably needs some mental health and uplifting, so I feel bad for the guy.
Well, because, like, am I allowed to say bullshit on this?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. This is America.
Okay. There's a certain level, you have a bullshit meter when you're watching these kind of shows, and early on, it goes off constantly. It's like that seismic earthquake machine. It's your
bullshit.
But as time goes on, you get worn down, and the needle stops moving as much. So you'll hear a claim, and like you won't react as crazy to it. You're numb to it.
Yeah, your brain does that because it hurts your brain to look at things that don't make sense. Like sometimes if you see an optical illusion, like you feel like discomfort or pain trying to figure out what's happening, right? It's the same thing with bad narratives. You're like, wait, how does this fit together? And so eventually you just have to kind of accept it to ease your brain. That's cognitive easing, man. That's an actual psychological thing.
And it was so bad that the first thing I thought of when you said that was a movie that I will not mention the name of.
Yeah, please. Yeah. So we have a rule on this podcast. We're not going to talk about a certain film trilogy because I go on a lot of different podcasts myself and people often want me to talk about it. So I wanted to start this podcast with my boy Trey here just so we could talk about other things.
Yes.
Not going to talk about that thing.
You probably will know what we talk about, what we're dancing around.
Yeah.
Viewer.
I thought of so many clever ways to say what it was without saying it, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it.
What should I say? Photoshop gay people in the background? Or
I'm cutting all this out.
We're cutting all this out. All of this out.
So, let's say we were making a Monster Quest, right? History Channel's like, you know what? We want some credibility. Yes. So we're going to go hire a YouTuber and a comic writer guy.
Ooh.
Right? That's how we get credibility with the kids.
Yes.
That is legitimately
how you get the credibility.
I'm a millennial. I'm still pretty hip. I think you're a zoomer, right? We got two demographics together here. We got a coalition. We can make this happen.
You're the Malcolm in the Middle demographic. I'm the Fortnite demographic.
Well, I think we win this one, pal. taking me and my boys. If you don't like it, too bad. Life's unfair.
Life is unfair.
So if they came to us, right? They're like, here's a couple million dollars. Here's a bunch of new camera equipment and a boat. Here's a shaggy local guy.
Shaggy local guy.
Yeah. And nice old lady with a story. And we get to come up with a show. How would we do an episode about Champ? What would you want to do?
Oh, God. See, this is the thing, is I've become so disillusioned with cryptids where like I'm like, oh, there's nothing here. Well,
let's say it's not Champ. If we just were doing a show about cryptids, what way would you want to talk about it? I guess we're doing it right now.
I guess it would be more like cultural based, like where we would talk about how the monster affects the local community and stuff.
Yeah.
Like have people embrace the monster, what they think about it, do they actually believe it? Might be like more like ethnographic, like anthropology.
Yeah, because that's what's interesting, right? Like why do people still believe in Champ, right?
Right.
I guess we don't really have, we're just talking about Champ here specifically. Like I don't really have any data like how many people actually believe in Champ. But I mean, like, if you grew up around that area, I'm sure it must have some cultural meaning to you.
Yeah.
You know, because there's like something, I'm not going to use the word spiritual, but there's something like a little extra about the lake because there's a story about a monster in it. And it just gives you a cultural touchstone. It gives you some kind of extra value to your home where you grew up in. And I think it's hard to say no to that. I know people aren't probably saying like an enthusiastic yes, I think there's a monster in there, but they're just not wanting to say no, there's not a monster. And I think that's talking about that is interesting.
Mm, yeah, I think so too. I think like the idea of like how people like, because I know like the local baseball team has it as like their mascot and stuff, where I don't know, people like to have something special about their town.
I wish I played for that team. I played for the Thunderbirds, which I guess
Thunderbirds.
I guess is a cryptid.
But, yeah, there's a Lost Tapes episode with the Thunderbirds.
Yeah. There's a story about the kid who gets lifted up by the bird, right, and carried off.
Yeah. I think that shows up in a later Monster Quest episode.
That story might have happened.
Yeah, I could see that.
There's enough reports in that one where I'll give that a maybe, I guess.
I know that, like, see, I went to West Virginia during the pandemic. That we had the trip planned out. I know that probably wasn't the smartest thing. We wore masks and all that. Anyways, I talked to people in, like, Flatwoods and in Point Pleasant. And this one, like, chain smoker guy, like, he saw me taking a picture of the Mothman statue in the center of town. And he just, like, he stopped his car. And he was like, he was like an elder. He was kind of old. He was probably like 60 or 70 something. And he like, he was like, hey, you, hey, just rolled down his window. He's like, come here. And I was like, oh, hello. And I was like kind of scared. And he was like, he's like, what do you want to know my 2 cents about that statue? And as he was talking to me, he like lit up a cig. He was
Yeah, I did.
and he was like, he's like, you know what? Say what you will about him. He put us on the map. That's all I can say.
He put us on the map. That's what I'm saying, though, right? Like it gives you a bit of cultural identity.
Yeah, yeah. And that guy was nice. He's like, you like pot? What do you say? You like pottery? And I was like, no. And he was like, well, there's a store over there owned by my old friend Jeb. He sells pottery. And I was like, oh, okay. It was very odd.
I was hoping he'd be like, hey, kids, you like Mothman? You're like, oh, yeah, sir. And you walk up to him and he just has a coat with a bunch of Mothman photos and paraphernalia.
Holy crap. That'd be awesome. I'd buy like all that kind of stuff.
Definitely would.
Little keychain with little Mothman.
That's the way he does. Every day he gets up, puts on his coat. Where do people get these trench coats? You just like Google trench coat for selling stuff on the street? Do they have a name?
Yeah. I don't know. Like vendor, merchant, trench coat.
I should get me one of these trench coats.
You know, it's like Neo.
A lot of people are trying to get into making money through weird stock memes or crypto nonsense. I'm going to go old school. I'm going to get into the trench coat selling stuff.
Yeah, sell your comics in the trench coat.
Hey, kids, you want to learn about science?
You want some Dune? Yeah. Oh, wait. Oh, crap. Oh, shit.
I can't sell. I can't sell the Dune book. I will get sued. Brian Herbert, if you're listening to this, I'm not selling Dune books out of trench coats on the street to children. I'm sorry. I've been accused of too much. But yeah, if you guys like this podcast, it's our first one we did together, so hopefully it went pretty good. Yeah. I think it did.
I think it did too.
Yeah, we'll probably do some more of these. I think we're going to try to do 2 a month, just because we both have other projects we're working on. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not the best audio editor, so it'll take me a while to get it figured out. But you can follow me at @GoldRushComic on Twitter, or you can go to my website afterthegoldrush.space to buy my books and check my stuff out. And I'm sure they could check out Trey's stuff on Twitter and YouTube too. You want to give them your links?
Yeah. I'm Trey the Explainer on YouTube. You can just type it in. I think my actual real URL is kind of it's cringy because it's like old. It's like gamer creator. Okay. It's something really bad. Something lame. So yeah, just look up my name on YouTube as Trey the Explainer. And then my Twitter handle is @Trey_Explainer. So yeah, just check me out there.
My generation, we had all of our bad handles back on a different internet that exists now. On old, like, forums and V-bulletins and ICQ chat rooms. And so, like, those names are gone, thankfully. So when we were 12 and had to make our online presence, you know, we had stupid names. We got a second chance to make our new ones.
Oh, no. See, I didn't get that. See, my channel is probably, like, how old is my channel? Like, almost, like, 10 years old or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it when I was like making Oh, this is some inside details. I made like Minecraft videos or something.
Of course
like
you
that.
Did. You didn't have to tell me.
They're gone. They're gone. I don't think anybody can find them. I think they're
I'm gonna find them.
No, they're on a flash drive somewhere in my house.
I'm gonna post the truth about Trey the Explainer video.
hashtag what's it called? I don't know. Really revealed.
Yeah. Trey's a Minecraft nerd. He's been hiding it from all of you.
Under that Minecraft simp early on, I was on that. I'm gonna join those people. Yeah. So yeah, that's why if anybody notices my YouTube URL, it's like gamer creator 123. It's like that's the reason.
That's super elite, man. I hope everybody liked the show. The logo was created by Isaac LaRosa, who does the After the Gold Rush comic with me, and the intro song is by Built to Spill, used with permission from the band. And that's that for the show.
Yeah, goodbye.
So long, folks.
Thanks for joining. Watch next time.
Yeah, listen.
Listen next. I'm so used to YouTube.